Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Deep Thoughts. We are once again at the Smoke Lounge. I'll move my camera there for a split second to plug it in. So you know me, I like to talk about the moon. We've been getting a lot of spammers, a lot of, I guess, NASA PSYOP employees. And these are, a little C on the moon rock. Well, they're a bunch of C's. They run around with this cut and paste strategy of pasting just absolutely mentally fucking ill replies to legitimate presentations. Of course, they haven't watched the video at all. It's probably some fucking bot by YouTube or some fucking Five Eye agency or whatever. But the beautiful thing is we're keeping the pressure on. They're reacting. We already get this Britannica fucking entry below every single video that we put, because of course they have to indoctrinate you while you're hearing the truth. Essentially, above the playhead is truth. Below the playhead is full fucking propaganda, trying to lie to your face about what happened from July, was it 16th, 1969, all the way to the end of the 72 missions. And so that's good. We've got them on the ropes. We've got them over the barrel. And, I think we should make them squeal like a pig. What do you think? So, I'm always trying to cover this, and, I've talked about it ad nauseum from some perspectives. So I sit at home, and I'm like, oh, damn, they want more moon missions stuff, more moon hoax episodes. And so there's only so many new things that are brewing. I'm going to talk to you guys about some of the things I'm researching. I'm trying to go down more into the granularity, but I tell you what, they have definitely hired, they're hiring people, okay? Out of the $60 million they fuck us with every single day, wasting our money in these absolutely useless space programs. I mean, they're not yielding jack shit for society, right? If we had to say, look, you're a private for-profit business now. We're the board of directors, 350 million people of America. What are we going to give for our $60 million a day? Because we got a lot of fucking ideas we'd like to do. We'd like to pay off all the shitty student loans out there, or at least pay for the attorney's fees to sue the shit out of every university that stole the kids' monies for unemployable degrees. We'd like to spend our money differently. Okay. If they had to come up with what we're getting out of this, it would be jack fucking shit. Nothing. At the maximum apex of their guarantee to us, they'd be able to say, well, inspiration for children. Guess what? There was a lot of inspiration before NASA existed. That's how everything came into existence prior to NASA's existence. So that's a line of horseshit. There was more inspiration out of the HAL 9000 and the 2001 A Space Odyssey to stimulate coders to create artificial intelligence than ever a real computer that existed yet. So we can get inspired without wasting $60 million a day. And if Trump really wants to get serious with this, he needs to cut him off. And just cut them off with one basic thing. What you do has no value to us. Rovers on Mars, fake fucking CGI rovers on Mars. What does that do for us, right? What will we need to do if there was a space emergency? Well, here comes a meteorite. It's going to fucking obliterate Earth, and we have to get the hell off this rock. And in a sustainable way that our DNA doesn't get chewed up by radiation, just leaving the Van Allen belts, ambient radiation from the sun, a coronal mass ejection. And then we need a mechanism to get to a planet, probably outside of our solar system. If ours is getting bombarded all of a sudden, it's most likely not a single rock. It's probably a bunch of shit coming in. So fleeing to Mars isn't exactly the solution. Fleeing to the moon isn't the solution. We need full-blown space travel. Faster than light propulsion. We need environmental systems. We need to be able to land on a rock and terraform the thing. But in the meantime, live within our own, DIY systems that we bring with us. They're not doing anything in that territory. As a matter of fact, a lot of that research could be accomplished on Earth before we ever get to the Zefron Cochrane Warp 1, right? But what do we get in these comments? We get no specificity about anything that I've said in the videos. They just march in with this these cut and paste things, which are really funny because it's just like, I just say, hide from channel. See you later, dude. Hope all those calorie energies that you converted, you know, were worth it because no one's ever going to see your fucking comments, right? We had a guy in there. I think his name was Vinny. If your name's Vinny and you didn't do this, it's not you. But some guy with some other name. But he came in and he was harassing every single person that made a comment supporting the fact that it's a moon hoax. And just simply saying that he's an authority, never explaining shit, calling people's names, but in a sort of a way that I would allow it. I mean, he's kind of like, well, you know, I don't think you're that smart or whatever. But he never furnished any information to rebut anything. The problem is that NASA is using our money to pay employees to come up with junk science cover-ups for every single thing they have been busted for when it comes to the moon hoax. And they've created a pissing match where there shouldn't be a pissing match. The fact that we as a society, as a global society, especially through the Great Awakening, are waking up to the truth and we're passing around truth and we're undoing their fucking lies. And the fact that our taxpayers' dollars in every country in the modern world, it's being consumed in part, who knows what the real budget is, it's being consumed in part to keep the lies going. Can you fucking imagine that, right? Imagine that we caught a bunch of pedophiles, a bunch of Hollywood actors and a bunch of Catholic priests and all these other fuck nuts that do this kind of stuff, singers, pop singers. And we actually apprehend them all, put them all in jail. And then as some matter of fucking law, we have to actually pay to continue molesting kids on their behalf, right? That's sort of how insulting this whole thing is to our hard-earned money, which runs the country. So one of the definitions of Trump's big success, if his big re-engineering of the world and IQ and all that stuff is supposed to happen, then what needs to happen is that this has got to stop. We have to put in place constitutional felonies, okay? Fucking punishable by up to a maximum of life in prison, no capital punishment, for distributing propaganda. But I don't think that, you know, an average human being making a video on YouTube is construed as de facto truth. But when your government does it, when the press does it, they have a whole doctrine of journalism that is supposed to happen. When you do scientific method testing, you got your blind, your double blind, you know, your placebos, your regular indication stuff and clinical studies for drugs or whatever. There's all kinds of scientific method that is used to try to optimize the indication. But we know just like, you know, Gallup polls, all that shit can be skewed to get what the fuck you want out of it, right? So this episode is going to try and put forth a link that you can give anyone on planet Earth to say, these are the smoking guns of the best smoking guns that we have right now, 2019, in my opinion, about the moon hoax. And again, they probably won't get through the intro, so you might have to fast forward it to like the moment that I start these evidential pieces here. But NASA has absolutely unequivocally admitted that we didn't go to the moon by various other things that they've done. The astronauts that supposedly traveled in this capsule all the way to the moon and back have absolutely proven beyond the shadow of a doubt that they did not go to the moon because their stories don't match. The most intelligent people on planet Earth that I have ever talked to have figured this out 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. Some people never ever believed that we went, and some people figured it out eventually. So where did we start? Boy, isn't that just a smorgasbord of good shit? One of the reasons why I want to do this episode is that there are areas where I just don't think we should try to push the story because there are too many variables in place that allow the anti-debunkers, or I guess the hoax debunkers, to have leverage against us, right? Let me give you one of the areas that I think we should not be pushing, even though I do understand why they do it. I do think what we are seeing is proof, and perhaps even a smoking gun, if you have the IQ to process what you're looking at. The great smoking guns are the ones where no one has to think. It's like, oh yeah, I guess you're right. This is all bullshit. One of the first things I think is very difficult for people to understand are the converging shadows on the moon. Here's why. The surface of the moon is not flat. And so the converging shadow thing, you can get an NASA employee that we pay fucking money for right out of our tax dollars to construct this lie that it's because of the crater shapes and the warped, you know, terrain as to why shadows will be converging, right? So one shadow is going straight out from the camera if the sun's to the back of the camera, which is always the case because they don't want that damn stage light in the fucking original shot, right? But the rock that's over to the right is casting a shadow that's going to almost be perpendicular to the rock that's in front because it's got a separate light off to the right. And it's really the problem that happens when you try to take a warehouse and light the whole thing. There's all kinds of movies out there where they had to light a full stage. And man, there are tons of lights and it gets super duper hot. You know, when they were filming 2001 A Space Odyssey, the moon set that was almost had no surface. It was just a little bit of a square or rectangle down when they went down to talk, you know, went down to touch the monolith. That room was boiling hot, according to everybody who was there. And so they'd have to turn the lights on, shoot, and then turn the lights off. Even in The Shining, when they were filming Jack typing in the typewriter, they had, you know, I think it was something like 800 light bulbs in the room that would turn on to light the whole thing to be perfect. And then they'd have to turn it all off because the place was sweltering hot. So that's why there's multiple light sources, because that's the way you light a room that's supposed to have sunlight. I wouldn't go for that. But let's dive in. Let's not mess around too much with the shit that doesn't work. The number one thing you can put in front of anyone's face to prove that we have never been to the moon is Project Orion. Okay? Project Orion was greenlit, I think now 3 years ago. And it was a project where NASA said, look, the Van Allen belts are these electromagnetic belts that protect us from all the coronal mass ejections from the sun, plus a bunch of other debris coming in from outside space. And it fends it off. It vibrates it, burns it, what have you. And you've never had a coronal mass ejection happen on the planet Earth and have a whole part of Earth get scorched. So they've never failed us, which means they are extremely powerful. So anybody who tries to say that they're not powerful is just absolutely absent in the knowledge of how the sun works, how heat comes to Earth, what our atmosphere is capable of defending us against, and what the Van Allen belts do. But what was Project Orion's objective? You can go look this shit up. Go watch the fucking trailers on YouTube, right? Their objective was to put human flesh through the Van Allen belts in a way that the human didn't die. That's NASA's mission statement for that particular project. And it's a project that should be still going to this day, but it doesn't exist anymore. And why doesn't it exist? Well, they immediately announced to the public that the first few missions are going to be manless, right? And so they're going to put this capsule up there, see what the radiation was internally, to see what their ability to shield radiation from the astronauts inside. All I can say is it must have been so unbelievably lethal that when they looked at the technology that we have in the public domain, that we're going to allow into the public domain, and the radiation readings on the inside of this place, inside of this capsule, it must have been so lethal that they gave up because they canceled the project. Either that or someone said, who the fuck made this a public project? You just admitted we didn't go to the moon. Who let this through? Now, Bart Sobrell, director of A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Moon and Astronauts Gone Wild, two absolutely imperative documentaries that you have to watch if you still think we went to the moon. Astronauts Gone Wild, again, it was a period name to make fun of, you know, Girls Gone Wild, which was a big series in 2003, and he just plagiarized that in a funny way and made Astronauts Gone Wild. But he called up NASA. This is, you can hear him say this in the interview I did with him. He called up NASA and asked them, what were the readings that you got from your first mission? And they said, it's classified. What's classified, NASA? How much radiation's coming from the sun? How much radiation's coming from the Van Allen belts? What's classified? What's the temperature of the Pacific Ocean at this XYZ? It's classified. Well, why is it classified? It's just water. It's ridiculous. It's classified because it proves, beyond the shadow of a doubt, that they could not have made it to the moon, or ever left low orbit, which today low orbit's between 200 and 350 miles. That's it. That is the only smoking gun on Earth you need to prove we never went to the moon. And that's why a smoking gun is a smoking gun. Once you got this one thing, you don't get to keep your history anymore. And I want you guys to start saying that. You know, the whole Lee Harvey Oswald thing. Once you punch a hole in it, you don't get to keep your history anymore. You just don't. The second you find the bullet holes that went through the windshield from the front to the back in Kennedy's car in Dallas, that's a smoking gun. You can't keep your history. Once you see the bullet that lodged into the chrome molding that goes around the windshield from the front to the back, it didn't go through, but it punched on the front, you don't get to keep your history anymore. That's what a smoking gun is. Here's the other great smoking gun that I just figured out. This will go on my next Moon Hoax Evidence episode. And you're going to hear this come up in other episodes, maybe even prior to this one. In fact, the one I'm going to do next will actually preview this. So this will be a double up, but no one's going to watch the other one who wants to see this one. So there we go. When you see astronauts float on the moon, you are seeing proof they are not on the moon. What do they say? Well, gravity on the moon is 1/6 gravity. Who knows if that's fucking true or not? We've never been there, right? It's all going to be a ratio of displacement of ethereal winds. That's it. But what happens when an astronaut jumps up and down? Well, one, it's 2x, right? So they've slowed the camera down 50%, and they probably ran it at 48 frames per second, and then play it back at 24, boom. You have this slow motion thing. One astronaut will probably weigh, on average, as a human being, 180 pounds, somewhere in there. The backpack weighs another 100 pounds. So that's what NASA said. And then you got their suit and all this other garb and stuff. And so they have maybe another 20 pounds, 10 pounds, something like that. All right. So if you take 1/6 gravity and you kind of round up, you'd be about 50 pounds. Every astronaut would weigh 50 pounds. All right. I remember weighing 50 pounds. Do you? I remember being 3 years old. I remember being 4 years old. And I remember being 5 years old. It's probably around the realm where I broke the 50-pound barrier in my life. I got a friend who has three dogs that all weigh less than 50 pounds. I'm sitting in a room with a bunch of shit that weighs less than 50 pounds. All right. When you're on the moon and you weigh 50 pounds, you're going to look like a 50-pound kid running around the moon. You're not going to be fucking weightless for any split second. Right, you don't jump up on Earth as a child and you're like, look, Mom, Dad, and you're like, enjoy it, son, because once you hit 50 pounds, you're going to fucking start, you know, landing on the ground. Smoking gun. Total line of bullshit. Bad science. Looked good. We all believed it. I believed it up until last year, okay? Probably December 2018, I finally figured out. I'm doing the math and I'm thinking, wait a minute, gravity's not going to work like that. It is what it is. Another smoking gun. In the movie by Bart Sibrel, you can just go Sibrel.com. You need to make sure, and he has it online for free in the YouTube area. We all need to purchase it to support him. But a funny thing happened on the way to the moon. Has a clip that was leaked to Bart Sibrel. He even put this online at one point. It's a 54-minute clip, I think. 54 minutes, I'm just trying to make sure the runtime is correct, where they are faking a shot of Earth through a portal window. What are they doing? Well, if you're in my other episodes, I know you've seen this, and this is a little difficult to explain, so it's not probably the top one you want to say, but if you show them the video on YouTube, send the link out, a little bit of an explanation. If you just cut the part of the film again, go to the YouTube video of his movie, move the playhead to this area and send it off with a little time stamp so that they can get right to the part that they're supposed to see. That's probably the best way to do it. They have got a camera on the other side of the pod, of this capsule, this thing. They're looking out of a round window that is inside of a round rectangle actual window container. Okay. There's a lot of people that argue with me. There's no round windows in the capsule. It's like, my God, how ignorant these human beings are. Just look the shit up. It was in Do the Right Stuff, I think, which was the HBO, or All the Right Stuff, excuse me. I don't get Spike Lee shit mixed up. All the Right Stuff, and it was Neil Armstrong supposedly saying, look, I gotta have this, we gotta have a window, gotta have it. Well, that was the kind of the hoaxy reality of why the window was there. But it's perfectly round. They're filming Earth, low orbit, 200 miles up, roughly, and they're showing Earth in this window. Then they put a gel on the side of the window to simulate day and night, you know, horizon. Because they're right on top of the daytime side of it. And they ended up filming the faraway shot first. And then they moved the camera closer to the window. And it's, you know, the blackness around Earth, which would normally have the Milky Way and stars. Well, it's black because it's the inside of this container that they're inside of. And so when they got really close to it, they were supposed to be far away. When they were far away, they were actually supposed to be close. So they got all the chronology backwards because they're practicing the shot. Damn fine piece of journalism there. And someone from NASA leaked it out either by accident or intentionally. When shown to Buzz Aldrin in the back room of a bookstore, this guy nearly shit a brick on camera. He threatened to sue Sobrel if this was ever shown. He said, we're just the passengers. Don't ask me. We were just the passengers. Go ask NASA. How do you have this footage? He says. Guilty, 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 fucking guilty. And then later that day, he punches Sobrel in the face and everybody feels great who still wants to believe in this fantasy called the moon landings. Now, for the record, I don't blame any of the astronauts. They had death threats. They had pension threats. I might have done the same thing. Who the hell knows, right? I think before I died, though, I'd punch out and do a little press conference and go, we didn't go, motherfuckers. See you later. I'm out. Right? But that's not seemingly possible yet. Another one. Second movie he made. Astronauts Gone Wild. Absolutely one of the most brilliant methodologies of confirming the moon landings. He's talking to two astronauts that were in the same limb together. Same capsule went down to the moon. One guy is sitting in his art studio. One guy is in his backyard in like some little like tiki hut or something like that. And I actually want to commend, I don't know, either one of these two guys. The guy in the backyard was actually pretty damn cool. His approach to it, I think, was very fun. And he knew about the Van Allen belt problem. And he just said, I don't care about any of that fucking bullshit. We went to the moon. That's how it works, right? And, you know, he's tired of being caught. He's tired of having to push this through. And he's like, look, I'm not going to admit on camera we didn't go is really what he's saying, right? He says, get out, you know. But he was actually polite to Sobrel, and he understood he had been set up for this potential hoax stuff, right? But here's the interesting thing. The first subtle thing that's going on is when Bart asked them, well, explain to me what happened. From the moment you got in the elevator to the moment you got back and splashed in the ocean, tell me the story. And the guy in the backyard actually had everything memorized, the whole thing. It's like he had been rehearsing this whole life. Well, then this happened, and that happened, then we did this, and we did that, and he just had the whole script memorized. I'm impressed, man. Seriously. It's a lot of shit to recall every single time you got to tell the story. But Bart hit him with one simple question that sort of blew the doors open before he got to the Van Allen belts. Again, the Van Allen belts exist because Project Orion was greenlit and then it was canceled. And they're holding the fucking data from the first mission at ransom because they say it's a matter of national security. Lie, 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 right? But he asked him, he goes, when you were landing on the moon with the 10,000-pound thrust engine, which would have been through your buttholes at the time that you were sitting in this plane, because the engine's so huge, it would have been in the living compartment that they were in. He said, was there any sound? The first guy, he contemplates the question as if he'd never been asked that question before. And he may not have been asked that question in his whole 40 years plus before he actually answered this question, which is supposed to be filmed around 2003, 2002, somewhere in there. And the guy pauses and then he goes, no, there's no sound in space. Well, where do we have a film that was made where there was no sound in space? Outside of Interstellar copying 2001 A Space Odyssey, which was after this interview, the only thing that this guy had ever seen was 2001 A Space Odyssey, where Kubrick honored the fact, without an atmosphere, you don't have sound. Problem. The astronaut's not smart enough to realize that if he's in an oxygenated cabin, even if the cabin was a vacuum and he had a helmet on with oxygen inside the helmet, it would have vibrated his ass and everything. He would have gotten sound into his head. It probably wouldn't have traveled from, if it was a pure vacuum, okay, it wouldn't have traveled from the walls to his head because there's nothing to vibrate. But the thing is the whole cabin was oxygenated and heated, by the way, with computers running. Everyone's trying to figure out what batteries they fucking used back in 69 because we can't seem to run a laptop for more than, you know, a few hours after the thing's 2 or 3 years old. So his buddy, who was in the same capsule with him, being interviewed in the backyard, asked the same question. And the guy said the right answer. And he just said it matter-of-factly. He's like, oh yeah, it was deafening. But the guy gave the right answer. If you're in a cabin with a bunch of oxygen, of course, that fucking thing, 10,000-pound thrust motor below you, right? So he busted him. Smoking gun right there. You don't get to keep your history. Sorry, buddy. Sorry. Second thing Bart asked them, what about the Van Allen belts? NASA in 1998 announced to CNN that they were so lethal they're going to have to check them out again. Space shuttle went up to over 400 miles up. Astronauts started seeing, you know, shooting stars inside their head, and they couldn't stop it because the electrons were going through their skulls, going through the hull of the ship, through their skulls, and bouncing off their cones and rods in their eyeball, registering light. And they had to drop this space shuttle down and, you know, clean up and go home. Now, if you read all the missions from 1998 from NASA, you will have no evidence of this mission. But Sabrell, in his first movie, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Moon, has a copy of the article because he made it in 2001 and it was still online. CNN has scrubbed old articles and you can't find it anymore. But he asked the first guy in his art studio, what about the Van Allen belts? And the dude said, well, what do you mean? And he goes, well, they're now considered to be so lethal that human flesh can't go through them. You were in a capsule of 1/4-inch aluminum. Aluminum is never on this fucking planet been used to protect against radiation. And there was a listener that tried to patronize me with my knowledge about radiation, telling me that the radiation from a nuclear bomb is different than radiation from the Van Allen belts. The fundamental component of radiation is an electron. Yes, if you punch a hole through an atom and you're throwing all of the atomic matter all over the place, you might get other things going into your body. But the fundamental component of radiation under all circumstances is a piece of atomic matter that is so heavy, uranium, plutonium, that the electrons can't be held in orbit and they constantly eject from the element or the component. And that's what radiation is, right? So what is the Van Allen belts? An electron cloud. Same shit, dude. But when they pushed this astronaut on it, he said, well, it must not have been lethal because we flew through them. The second guy just said, I don't know anything about this. I just, you know, I know we went through them, blah, 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 blah. All right. Now, there's some people who try to come and speculate about the Van Allen belts existing. I don't know. I mean, I have seen those belts my entire lifetime. I mean, in illustrations, and there has to be a reason. When a coronal mass ejection comes at us from the sun, and again, if the sun is a 10-inch ball, Earth is 36 feet away, approximately, and is about the size of 1/3 of a period on a piece of paper. So we are teeny tiny specks. So when you see these big coronal mass ejections and all these assholes say, oh man, it's going to fry all the electronics on Earth and we're going to have a huge blackout. That's all bunk, man. I mean, like, you'd have to have, you know, 1/4 of the sun just blow up and come out towards us before we're going to actually have a Earth frying event and we'll just vaporize in 2 seconds, right? 97%, according to the authorities, of a coronal mass ejection comes right back to the sun due to the pressure from the ethereal winds pushing it back towards the sun. So only 3% ever escapes into the solar system to then be serendipitously bumped into by everything else. But just like diffusion in water, ether behaves just like water. And so as this thing is spreading out in space, it gets diffused. Just like when they throw a bunch of toxic shit in the ocean, they go, hey, it's okay, it'll diffuse, and you know, a few years it'll just be part of the Earth. Same theory. A lot of the other smoking guns have to do with temperature. Temperature on the surface of the moon. Now, what I'm about to tell you is based on complete conjecture, complete bullshit, submitted by NASA about the moon's surface. They have no fucking idea how hot and cold that place is. They don't. All right? Now, officially, they have a black project that got there, and somehow it might be similar. But back in 1969, it was all made up. What is their estimate? And I don't think they were trying to lie to us, but I think their estimate was, in the vacuum of space, on the surface of the moon, again, they're the one that says there's no atmosphere. And hey, you kind of have to believe it, because we can see the surface of the moon with a great telescope. It looks crystal fucking clear. And it wouldn't be crystal clear if there is even the remote chance of having an atmosphere on there to refract light, right? They say that in the light, it's 280 degrees Fahrenheit. I don't know what that is in Celsius. In the dark, it's the exact opposite, 280 degrees Fahrenheit negative. The number has been adjusted a little bit, just like the amount of miles to the moon has been adjusted over time. That's the last time I heard it dictated to me. Now, again, you don't have to go up to 280 either way to have huge goddamn problems with a lot of the stuff that they did on the moon. But the number one thing that would have happened is expanding and contracting of the materials used in the moon missions. Now, there used to be a video online where these documentary filmmakers who were trying to isolate whether it was a hoax or not had interviewed the gentleman from Hasselblad that built the cameras that were used, at least in some of the moon missions, if not all the moon missions. Now, in my opinion, one guy could not build all the cameras being used, but he built a few of them, especially the first ones. They let him go through the whole spiel, and he had one of the cameras in front of him, right? And he went through how it was built and all this other stuff, and definitely was built different than the ones that my dad had when I was a kid. And the only thing that was ever rumored was they had a special lubricant that went into the unit itself. But they saved this little gem question at the end, and I've seen this with my own two eyes. They asked the guy, what would happen if we took this camera and made it 280 for 10 minutes and then stuck it in negative 280 for 10 minutes? Hell, for even 1 minute, right? And the guy looked with like deer eyes all of a sudden, like, what? And it had dawned on him right in the middle of the interview that this was a factor that was dealt with on the moon, but he knows that what he submitted to NASA would never have survived that. His words, I swear to God, verbatim as I remember them, was, quote, well, it would have exploded, or it would explode. He used the word explode, as I remember it. Okay. Can't have your history now, can you? As soon as you take this thing out, it's in the back door, which is in the dark. Remember, we saw Buzz Aldrin, fully lit, of course, coming down the back ladder. NVIDIA tried to do this hocus-pocus horse shit inside of a CG environment. That's real, right? He comes down, he would have the camera. I mean, you know, Neil would have gone first with the camera on his chest. So as he walks in the light, kaboom, this camera would have exploded, right? Now, the sun's radiation in its ambient form, and you're just getting a suntan on the moon without an atmosphere. Okay, remember what dermatologists tell you about the sun? They keep telling you to get out of the sun, put a bunch of sunscreen on. Part of that's to make sure you have the worst health on planet Earth by having no vitamin D coming out of your pituitary gland. Believe me, it's a scam, right? It makes you sick, and then your skin gets fucking shitty. And then, of course, the sunscreen, when hit with light, it starts becoming a carcinogen. That's a big thing we've now figured out. So they're literally prescribing you into skin cancer so that they can take care of you. And so that's a whole fucking scam unto itself. But the reason why we have UV protection in our car windows, on our sunglasses, because light, even going through the super thick greenhouse gas layer and our atmosphere up there, still is potentially at a microscopic level lethal. When you're on the moon with no atmosphere at all, it's so lethal that by 1989, NASA, and this is, I got this first degree, man, from the dude who was on the project, the dude that was responsible for coming up with this summation, said that they would have to line the capsule was 6 inches of water in order to protect an astronaut from the lethal radiation in space before coronal mass ejection, and definitely had nothing to do with the Van Allen belt, just regular ambient radiation. So let me remind you of a little piece of history. Radiation. Where did we first figure out that uranium had radioactive properties? Where the electrons escaped the bar of uranium? There's a brilliant woman by the name of Madame Curie. She died of radiation exposure trying to figure out what radiation was. She had an envelope of film because they did a lot of exposures on things. She had it in a cabinet. She put the film down and then had a bar of uranium that she put down on top of the envelope one night, went home. Later on in the week, they ended up using that film, and all the shots had this huge exposure right where the bar of uranium was. And she figured out, oh my God, this bar is emitting something that's actually frying the film through the envelope. That's how they discovered radiation. Now, albeit a bar of uranium on top of a thin layer of paper and all that kind of stuff is definitely a very intense exposure. But also a bar of uranium has something called metal shielding, which is that the form of the bar itself is actually capturing more of the radiation internally than is actually escaping externally. And this is a big principle of DU rounds that are in like the A10 Warthog. As long as the round is solid, it has metal shielding, which again, it has a far smaller radioactive footprint than when it's shot out of the barrel of this gun. I think it's like 14 inches or so, 12 to 14 inches, and it liquefies in the air. The second it comes out of that Gatling gun, it's liquid, but it's together because it's so heavy. When it hits the tank, it penetrates and splatters everywhere, which is why DU poisoning is all over the deserts of the Middle East. The first crew that went over to clean up all those tanks, every single member of the cleanup crew died of radiation. All right, so you got a camera in space, right? Not only is it traveling to the moon through the Van Allen belts, which is going to fry it to fucking death before you ever get there, including the astronauts. Once you get to the moon and you walk outside with this camera, okay, the cameras, all the Nikon cameras that I ever dealt with as a kid, I believe that the whole thing is made of mostly aluminum and stainless steel. Not a real good repellent against radiation. Had they surrounded it maybe some 2 feet of concrete, it would have had a lot better chance of, effectively defending off some radiation, or they built the thing out of lead or something, right? But weight is a huge factor when doing any rocketry, so that didn't happen for sure, right? It definitely didn't happen. So all the film inside the cameras would have been completely exposed simply by being in this hostile environment. And that's just, that's negating completely the consideration of the Van Allen belts itself, right? The other super smoking gun is very, very subtle. Very, very subtle. When you look at the Apollo 11 photographs taken of the lunar lander on the moon, you will see the 10,000-pound thrust engine coming out of the bottom. It's, by the way, it's just clean as a whistle, right? Suppose that's possible. But there's a little condom that was on the bottom of this cone. It's a little sheath of material. Looked like it probably covered maybe 50% tops, probably a third of the actual cone itself. But it's lying on the ground right next to one of the legs of the limb. Well, you've seen the footage. You've seen the footage when they were landing. Bunch of dust popping out underneath this limb. None of that dust ever got on any of the legs. None of it got underneath the belly of the ship. But when the astronauts jump around, boy, their legs get covered with that fake lava dust or whatever the hell they used to build that stuff. It got sticky all over their bodies. It was a big problem. Not for the legs. Not when you're blasting it with a 10,000-pound thrust engine. And why is that condom still there? That little cover would have come off however far away when they started punching the motor. And it's my assumption that it would have burned. You know, I'm not sure if they had some idea that some other rubber band thing pulled it off first, or they just simply said, look, when this rocket launches, that little thing's going to come off. Don't worry about it. No burn marks on it. No dirt on it. It was as if some prop guy just dropped it down there. Complete bullshit. You don't get to keep your history. I'm really sorry. Now, one of the other things that's starting to pop up that's going to be probably a part of my episode two are the batteries that supposedly kept this whole module going from the moment it takes off from the planet Earth, and there's no extension cord attached to the Saturn V, all the way to space, all the orbiting, and then all the way back. What battery is going to provide heat so these astronauts don't freeze to death, right? What do you think would happen to you if you went outside? Well, here's the other thing too. There's a bit of a complete mathematical problem with the equation of what's actually happening inside this limb. What did they say light was in terms of temperature? Around 280 degrees Fahrenheit. What did they say the dark was? 280 degrees negative. Well, if you have a limb sitting on the moon, one half of it minimum is going to get blasted with light and the other half is going to have a shadow on it. So you're going to have huge heat wave coming up. Remember, a match, I think, starts about 320 degrees Fahrenheit. So you're only 40 degrees away from a match lighting. The other side is so damn cold that if a human being were to walk out in that vacuum of space, you'd start freezing to death like immediately, right? What happens when Payne Weber, right, his plane depressurized? They said everybody inside suffocated and froze to death in 2 seconds. No one felt anything. Now, I was recently watching the Cinema Tyler's breakdown of 2001 A Space Odyssey, and when they did the scene where Dave ejects himself out of the back of the pod into one of the sort of pressure lock areas, he said that he thinks that the human body can live for 1 minute in the vacuum of space. I was always told in my physics class and astronomy class that it's actually zero Kelvin, which is about 367 degrees Fahrenheit or something like that, negative, right? So in that realm, I think you'd be an ice cube in about half a second. It's going to freeze you and your internal organs just boom, right off the bat. Maybe there's some other science that I'm unaware of, but he said 1 minute. When the famous dude, Pascal, did his hot air balloon experiment where he said the Earth looked like a flat disc with turned up edges, he had a sphere which he tried to control which side of the sphere was actually pointing towards the sun. He had painted one half of the sphere black and left the other one stainless steel like a mirror. His objective was to turn the black one, turn the reflective one towards the sun, I think, or maybe the black one towards the sun or whatever. He was trying to basically balance the heat within his unit, but he kept spinning the entire time and it didn't really work well. You know, who knows if the whole history of that dude has been psyoped and it's all fake, but I think inside the limb you have a problem. How do you do this, right? Any of you have lived in the hot regions of the world, especially Texas or Arizona, and it's summertime, Nevada, you know that the very windows of your house, if towards the sun and it's 115 degrees out, you can't put your hand on that. You especially couldn't put your hand on any metal because it'll literally burn your flesh. I've seen little kids in Kansas when I was a kid go down a slide that was a stainless steel slide, and his mom's like, "Oh, honey, go," and he doesn't want to go. And that fucking slide was boiling hot to the point I saw a kid go down once and literally I watched the back of the skin on his legs stick to the fucking slide, and by the time he got down to the bottom he had no skin on the back of his legs. He's screaming to death. Poor kid. And that's just planet Earth. So what do you do when you have one side of your limb that's going to be expanding one way because of this huge heat signature, and then all the metal around the back side of this thing is going to be in really cold temperatures, right? And they did wrap it in a bunch of weird foil and with all the scotch tape and tent rods and all this other stuff. I mean, the unit is just the most laughable looking thing on planet Earth. I'm sorry, guys. God bless them for trying. But the batteries. What battery system in 1969 is going to be able to furnish all this power constantly, right? It just got more and more absurd as all the missions went back to the moon. The amount of stuff they did on the moon got longer and longer and more elaborate. How's that possible? Now, when I was a kid, I was told that the moon buggy ran on the equivalent of a 9-volt battery. And, you know, they say because there was less gravity, and it's like, bullshit, okay? One, that thing weighed 800 pounds. Okay, 1/6 gravity, you're over 100 pounds on that vehicle, driving in dirt. A 9-volt battery? Oh, really? So let's make a 100-pound Rover. We'll take it down to Huntington Beach, put it in the sand, and you show me a 9-volt battery that can rotate those tires, digging into the soil and all that stuff. Complete bullshit, okay? Let's go to the next smoking gun. Talking about the moon buggy, the dude in the buggy is a dummy. There's a little rhyme for you in case you got to remember. The dude in the buggy is a dummy. How do we know it's a dummy? Because we can open our eyes and look at all the footage. Now, whether or not it's a miniature or whatever, who gives a shit, right? The dude doesn't move at all. There's a hand that's attached to the steering wheel, and the other hand's just down there. And supposedly, every single time they drove the buggy, every single time, there was nothing intelligent going on with the person who's in the driver's seat. Never turning the steering wheel, never waving at his buddy. Remember they played golf at one point? They're always goofing off, fucking around on this set. So what, if they got all stoic and completely behaved when they got in the buggy? No, they'd be screaming. You know, it was like it was Apollo 15. I actually misstated that because I think I said it 12 several times in the past. It's 15 where the buggy goes up. I had someone quote it wrong to me, and that's where I got stuck in my head the wrong way. But go look at the footage. It's a joke. It's a complete joke right in front of your face. You don't get to keep your history. Sorry. Then there's a beautiful one. I think I heard Bart Sabrell say this first, so I'm going to throw the credit to him. During the entire moon mission fiasco from 69 to 72, six missions supposedly land on the moon. In all cases, they have video cameras. All right. Now, what never occurred ever, ever, ever in any mission was someone's got a video camera and they roll camera and point it from the moon, any position, I don't care where it is, and point it towards Earth. Now, I don't give a shit if NASA said, don't do that. You wouldn't be able to stop astronauts from doing that. They would take it and shoot Earth because what would be the most amazing thing that you would see? I mean, literally, you put a gun against anyone's head that's been to the moon. What's the most amazing thing you saw the whole fucking time you were there? It's where you're from. 260 or 237,000 miles away on average. That is the most amazing moment, and you're not videotaping that? Oh, but we got a videotape of, the limb blowing up and going back into outer space, and perfectly mirroring itself with the module that's in orbit, a maneuver that's just insanely fucking complicated, and they never made a mistake. Six times in a row, boys, just no problem, click, goes together, full-blown Hollywood, right? Why didn't they make that shot happen? Because they can't. They can't do it. This is the inside of a warehouse, folks. And I don't give a shit if it's a dome, a square box, a rectangular box. It don't matter. Tetrahedron box. You can't place Earth in the proper location at the proper scale to get that shot happening. Oh, there's a still shot of it, which when you pull it in high contrast from the original submitted on the internet, you get to see this perfect square around Earth because that negative has been cut and pasted directly into the other negative. Straight up Hollywood compositing. You don't get to keep your history. Now, there's another one that Bart made me aware of that I think is absolutely tremendous. It is a smoking gun in a way, but it's one that you can kind of throw out if everyone's on board with the other smoking guns and they're like, oh my God, throw this one out there. It's like a little cherry on top. Bart recalled what it took the Boeing company to make the 747. He said, look, the 747 took, I believe it's at least three more years to get off the ground than when the moon missions were announced to actually stepping on the moon. Here's why this is a big deal. By the time they announced the creation of the 747 and the intent to create this big-ass ship, right? They already had been flying for over 40 years before, roughly. So they already had aviation figured out. They had wingspans figured out. They had all kinds of jets that were flying. But that 747, which was just a bigger version of everything else, couldn't get off the ground. And I think over 160 attempts to get it off the ground. It's over 150 for sure. So they kept running it down the runway, and they couldn't get enough lift on these wings. They couldn't figure out how to build everything to get it to work. And that took longer to master with decades of previous experience flying than it took us to go to the moon for the very first time, and yet we nailed it every single time, minus, supposedly Apollo 13, which, again, the official report on what the explosion was outside the module was like a paragraph. It didn't really say what exploded. To my knowledge, there was no re-engineering of anything as a result of this mysterious explosion, right? I mean, when the Pinto, for instance, back in the 70s and 80s, kept exploding anytime someone ran into the back of it because the gas tank was in a bad position and they didn't want to put a little liner in there or something, a little shield in there. They waited until they got killed enough people in fucking burning fires, and then they redesigned it through a recall. Christ, if we almost lost, hundreds of millions of dollars. I mean, it was $9.5 billion was consumed from Bart's estimate for the whole moon mission fiasco. And this is 1960s and 70s money, man. That's a ton of money. And so you're not going to throw away $1 billion again on an accident that might occur. You got to stop the whole program. Just like when the space shuttle Challenger exploded, they pull it. They don't launch for a little while until they figure out what happened. When the Challenger burned up coming in, they grounded everything until they figured out what was going on. And then they announced to the public different changes in foam and all kinds of other methodologies of protecting these folks so they don't die. All right. Now, there's been some things out there that, again, they're presented as great pieces of evidence, but again, they just open up too many excuses why this occurred. One of them is blatantly wrong. And when I was first getting into this, I fell for it because I didn't have the other piece of the information. But one of them was the big footprint on the moon, which has sort of a slatted horizontal pattern on this bottom of the shoe. And then they would show you the bottom of the shoes that the astronauts put on when they got inside the elevator to go up to the Saturn V launch. And the bottom of their shoes are smooth leather. All that seems ridiculous to me. But they went ahead. What happened was they gave them these little booties to put on the bottom of their shoe. But Bart had a really great observation, which was that if it's 280 degrees Fahrenheit out there and you got a rubber booty on the bottom of your shoe, over time, that booty would turn into glue. I mean, it would just turn into shit because it'd be completely mulched. If you take your average galoshes that you have and turn up your oven to 280 and put them in there on a cookie sheet, take a look at what they're going to look like 10 hours later, because that's how long they were roaming around at times. There's been days up there at times, right? One of the other great smoking guns is the fact that they use sets at least twice. Different sets they use twice. So you would have, again, one set with the same mountains in the background, and it didn't have any rocks of any kind, big rocks or anything. It was pretty smooth, let's put that way. There's the lunar module. On another mission later, it's the same set, same mountains in the background with a bunch of different rocks leading up to the module. The module's been kind of pushed into a different spot on the same set. The excuse from NASA is those mountains are so big in the background that they're still showing up even though we're in a different spot. And I mean, like, how goddamn ignorant is that, right? Go towards the Rocky Mountains of Colorado from Kansas and then come at it from Nebraska and tell me that those mountains look exactly the same in your eyeball. They don't. You're looking at it from a different perspective. They're not going to be in the same spot. But again, insulting your intelligence with their debunking bullshit. I'm making this episode, which is obviously a bunch of repeats from other stuff, because I'm changing the tense by which we present this information. These are smoking guns. These are things that you can prove on your cell phone in a nice little conversation with someone. Give them a video I've made, someone else has made. And you can just look at them and go, there you go. This means this is fake. Every single mission has this stuff in it. And so it's all fake. One of the things that I hear a lot from people that, I don't know, they get embarrassed in public or whatever it is, they say shit like, well, I think maybe the first mission was faked. Or they'll say that the new one is that the Neil Armstrong footage was faked. of him coming down the ladder and saying those words, right? But they faked that because they couldn't get the footage back to Earth, and Nixon wanted to be live, and so they faked it. Whatever, dude. The whole thing is fake. The whole goddamn thing is fake. We got to be mature to deal with it. And I know you guys who are on board, you're on board, man. The other one that I think we should probably lean away from is the sea rock. There's a rock, looks like it's papier-mâché. Someone said it was a shadow from an antenna. Again, the sea would be white if it was a pubic hair on the film, because it wouldn't have exposed the film, which has a base color of white. It wouldn't be dark. The only way that happens is, I think if you are running it through a movie projector, then it's black, because you're obstructing the light coming to the silver screen. But that's not the way that film was developed, okay? The other one is, there's obviously a lot of speculation about the landing back in the ocean. I would say to most of you guys, don't worry about that. If we happen to find something that is absolutely conclusive, then fine, we've got something conclusive. I'm going to share one little piece that I've shared before, but you can kind of stop at any one of these smoking guns. I mean, honestly, for me, one smoking gun is all you need. Yeah, it's fun to go through all the other stuff, but you don't have to. Now, there have been some Caltech physicists that have taken, and they made videos on this, where they did a computer simulation of atmosphere. They took this bullet-shaped module that's coming back from the moon, and they did this idea that NASA tells us, which has a blast shield on the flat side, and they turn it around, and the bullet's going backwards, right? So pointy side up, flat disc bottom with the blast shield on the bottom coming down through the atmosphere. They were absolutely unable to get this thing not to flip and roll, because how do bullets come out of guns? Straight, pointy side going straight, right? That's why they're made that way. Right now, pistols have hollow points and that kind of thing, but that's a close range situation. And quite frankly, if it did roll, it's just going to do more damage, right? But you have your Eagle Claw, you know, hollow points that'll fucking not go through the back of you, and they will just absolutely cave in your chest, cave in your head. You're going to die, period, right? I mean, even if it hit your shoulder, you might lose your arm. I mean, it's bad news, right? But normal 5.56, 308, all round rounds, it'll go right through you. Right? Because they're supposed to go super long distances. Well, this capsule is a point, and it's going to go back the other direction. It's going to flip around. But it probably, if you would just let it come with the point, it's going to come through and probably stay in that configuration. But they even tried that, and they said it started rolling still, because it's not a big, long surface to disperse the friction evenly. That's all I know is what I saw on this particular video. But he was using the computer simulation software to do this. And he's just showing you. He's like, look, man, I can't get this to do this. Maybe NASA figured out magic, but I can't figure out how to pull this off. And I've tried all the angles they said were the specific angles that this thing had to come in at using the books to figure this out. And I can't figure this out. So, as I said in the Keeping the Pressure On episode, this is starting to go to the next stage within the NASA organization. Again, tons of propaganda and lies coming out of the organization that is NASA, which makes it into mainstream press, which makes it into all your science mags and everywhere that they want to pump this stuff, YouTube. And they're lying. Now, let's qualify a lie here. So, do you know people that really think we went to the moon? Yes, you do, most likely. It wouldn't be hard if you didn't know one. Just go into the supermarket, look at old people and ask them. They'll tell you that we went. All right. Are they lying? Not really. They're telling you what they believe is true. They just don't know what the truth is. They also are probably patriotic Americans, and so they are totally on board. One of our listeners said something beautiful, which is probably not true, obviously not true in its absolute form, but he said, you Americans are the only people that think that you went to the moon. Rest of us, we talk about it in Europe. We know you didn't go. I saved this towards the end because I also mentioned this in one of my recap videos earlier this season, but it's something to remember because this comes up a lot in the suggestions, or I should say suggest in the comments on YouTube. The question comes up all the time. Well, I don't understand how they could get the Russians to go along with our lie, because there's this perception, which I think is very fascinating, that the Russians had enough technology to prove that we didn't go. One, I think that's an assumption that probably isn't completely true. We don't know what they had, right? I think they would too. I actually honestly agree with that, but I don't, you know, Russians have never come out and said, no, we had this little thing that tracks this thing, and then we know that you faked it. But the reason why, the Russians went along with the hoax is that they also did hoaxes. When you start looking at all the the USSR footage of moon experiences, and then you start studying stop motion animation, they move a little model, take a snapshot, move a little model, same thing with all those old cartoons with the reindeers when you were kids, or Tim Burton's work with Nightmare Before Christmas, same technology. One of the huge smoking guns that NASA's spacewalks were complete bullshit was that they made a mistake. As the narrator of the last time I saw this video brilliantly said, and I wish I could give specific credit to whoever this was, there is the astronaut crawling out of the module he's in, and he's got the oxygen tube going to him. They even did this really neat shot of a glove that flew out, right? It was a romantic thing that happened, right? Oopsie daisy, lost a glove. The astronaut goes out, and he's floating, and he's like in this like crouching, hidden tiger, whatever mode, right? His helmet turns on a swivel, as if the helmet's actually attached to his jawbone, and it's got a swivel. And so what you do is you see this, you know, sort of like cool motorcycle helmet thing he's got on, and it goes, and it turns to the left, as if he's looking back at the camera. Well, problem. That suit doesn't have that feature. That helmet is on, and when it's on, it doesn't rotate. Why? Because the rotation is part of the detachment from the suit. If he were to turn his head, he'd be undoing the very seal that is keeping him safe. And so it's an impossibility. It's an artistic license that was taken. It was an artist taking his liberty of making this animation look more cool. Hats off. The stop animation was really well done, but it was stop animation. And the other factor behind this is that everything in the foreground is jittery, right? I mean, everything that's supposed to be coming out of this unit, including the astronaut, his tube, his glove, it's all drrrr. But the Earth that's spinning down below is moving smooth as glass. So it might have been a composite shot against the animation, I don't know why this wouldn't be actually equally jittery besides a composite shot, right? You shoot one on one frame, and the black part is all transparent, and you push the Earth through as a separate reel. Again, what's amazing is, and what's unfortunate by NASA not coming out with the truth, and we know why they don't. They're going to lose their $60 million. JPL is going to go under. Potentially people will be brought up on charges if they're still alive. Again, I think that we could easily, from Donald Trump's perspective, grant immunity first and say anybody who comes out and tells me what happened from 1969 to 1972, you have full immunity. All of you astronauts still living off your pensions, I guarantee you your pensions are going to remain in place. In fact, I'll put $1 million bonus out of my Trump fund for anyone who does it. I'll protect your pension and I'll give you an extra $1 million. You can give it to your family. No inheritance tax. Go. Then we'd be able to appreciate on a whole other realm the science of the hoax. And we could finally straighten out history. Who did what, when, and how? Now, I guaranteed some new moon evidence coming. It is nothing to do with this episode in terms of what I've presented here. So that guarantee is still coming. And I'm going to hold that until we get it executed beautifully. Now, what I find interesting, I did a whole episode on dealing with the moon hoax. I'm going to plagiarize myself a little bit here because I got a little more time on my stick. And I think it's always important to remember this, because as we get in conversations with each other, it's important that we don't I would say don't get into a situation where you're disowning human beings as a result of these conversations. One, you're seeing the frailty of their minds, which is actually, I think, super fascinating, isn't it? I sit downstairs in the lounge and there's all kinds of people that can't believe it. And so, you know, we present what we present and we don't call anybody names and we just let them walk out still believing or chewing on some facts that hopefully keep them up at night for a little while. But it's interesting to see a grown man, especially a grown man, looking at proof that we didn't go, looking at these smoking guns, usually without the scientific aptitude to really validate anything. But believe me, out of everything I've said in this episode, most people know that some of this stuff is totally true. I mean, they know enough scientific fact to understand that, you know, taking a complex Hasselblad and jerking its heat 500 degrees in different directions is going to cause it to explode. Most people understand that radiation exposes film. Otherwise, Madame Curie's entire life is a lie, which it isn't. But we're always trying to figure out how does the world have so many problems in 2019? How do we get such a corrupt group of politicians, bankers, military at times, law enforcement at times, intelligence agencies at times, being super duper corrupt? Well, some of it's going to be duping innocent people who believe they're doing good, and the other ones are just super devious. One of the things I like to sort of remind people that are, unfortunately, most of them are baby boomers. I don't mean to put a big stink on baby boomers because there's a lot that are totally awake and they're doing their part, putting their skin in the game to wake their other friends up. So there's a lot of great people out there at all ages. But most commonly, when I find people who still believe all these official stories, you know, all the assassinations of Kennedy, Kennedy's brother, MLK, Malcolm X, here's what's weird to me. When someone does a hoax one time, and no one's ever seen the hoax before, ever, 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 I think we can all understand why people believe that it was legit, because they'd never seen the trick before. But in one decade, four amazing people were murdered because they were going to change the world against these controlling forces. You would think that the people who lived in the 60s, and a bunch of them absolutely did do what I'm about to say, but a bunch of them, I think the majority of them didn't, they never got hip to the hoax of these assassinations being a fucking lone gunman every goddamn time, right? Malcolm X, supposedly the Nation of Islam, blew him away. You know, get your hand out of my pocket. The autopsy, I believe, said that Malcolm X was shot from the, was it the flea, the area above the stage? Someone was shooting down on him. But I think most people are like, well, that guy was militant. He was sort of pro-Black Power or Black Panther, and which were doing all kinds of wild crimes and all kinds of stuff. So they're kind of like, well, that guy was a shit starter. I don't think that's actually true. I think he just spoke very clearly about what was going on. Martin Luther King always kept it very diplomatic. He knew everything that was going on. He was being framed for sleeping against his wife and fathering kids and, you know, out of wedlock and all this other rumors that were then later admitted in a Senate court or Senate hearing by the alphabet agencies that they were actually doing this against him and it wasn't true. But he played it first class, right? He played it as a diplomat. I have respect for both perspectives. You know, Malcolm X saying, look, I'd rather know that someone's racist against me than them to talk to me as if they accept me when the second they walk away, they're going to stab me in the back every way they possibly can. How can you not respect that? I think what's really great about that is that, isn't it the author, Alex Haley? I think he was the guy that wrote the book on Malcolm X. Of all the history I've ever read about a single individual that had this sort of influence on society, you know, we're off topic a little bit, but this is sort of the formula of waking up. His appears to be an extremely accurate portrayal of this guy's life. Nothing was polished up. Again, I can't quite remember the chapter that talked about his assassination and whether or not he disputed any of the facts. I don't remember that being the case. Otherwise, I would have been suspicious way before recently because I read that book in the 90s. But one thing I get to with baby boomers is I say, look, you want me to calm down with conspiracy theories. Because once you tell someone like two or three conspiracy theories, you get this generalization. You believe everything's a conspiracy. Everything. Not everything is a conspiracy, right? And believe me, what's really fucking hilarious about these people, even people I know who are fucking massively intelligent, as I hear this statement over and over and over again, and this is what my co-host Kyle, and there's a funny story about this with MK Ultra, I'll repeat here, and I'll tell you the quote through what he said. He called me in, or I called him in like December of 2007. He and I have been best friends since 1989. This is a long time in. And I said, dude, the world is fucking totally corrupt. It's bankers, bankers, bankers. 9/11's an inside job, all this other shit. And he's listening to me, and he's so unprepared for what I'm about to tell him that he's like silent on the phone. And this guy is like a fucking rocker. I mean, he's so progressive. He's not in any bubble of any kind, but it was hitting him with so much information. He didn't know how to process it. So he says to me, he goes, it sounds to me like, well, his quote was, he says, dude, there's just evil people in the world. Not everything is a conspiracy, meaning the terrorists for 9/11 were real and blah, blah, blah. And very just kind of like dismissive of everything I just told him. And I don't know if I did a good job telling him or not. So fast forward to 2008, it's 4th of July weekend week. I am on vacation. I haven't heard from Kyle since December the previous year. And it's not like he and I at the time didn't go a couple months without talking to each other. And it wasn't uncommon for us not to talk to each other, but this was a pretty long stint. Plus, I dropped this on him and he had a really weird reaction to it. And I remember I was sitting in the passenger seat of a car. I think my girlfriend was driving the car. And my phone rings. And it's Kyle Toucher. I'm like, oh, this is crazy. Bing. What's up, brother? All he says on the other side of the phone is, you were right. I said, what? He goes, you were right. I said, right about what? He goes, I just finished Zeitgeist, the movie. This is right when it came out, right? He goes, you were completely right. He goes, I was a total shithead. And we had this great conversation, right? And so what I still hear today in 2019 is, not everything's a conspiracy. They're just shitty people in this world. And that really talks about things that are not moon-based, but it's very interesting. So what I tell baby boomers today who come at me with these official story adaptation, pressure points, you just need to accept fucking history for the way it was written. And we know that the victors write the history books, but we're going to ignore that, right? As I say, look, we've been running the world, according to you baby boomers, since you guys grew up and took power. Okay. Would you say the world is better today than it was 40 years ago, 50 years ago, 60 years ago? Is the educational system better in the United States of America? Do we have this many bums and people on welfare? No. Or homeless people, I should say. No. Did kids get educations worth hundreds of thousands of dollars that can't get employed? They're pouring my coffee for a living. Did we have that back in the day? No. We had trade skills. Good old-fashioned trade skills. Go build a house. Go fix a car. Go fix my plumbing. Whatever. I'll fix your thing however I can fix my thing because I got a trade skill too. The world was balanced and it was beautiful. It was actually way more fucking moral than it is today, right? So I say, look, we've done your methodology of what, if you really boil it down to how much these fuckers research anything or think, zero, right? Zero fucking research, but they know everything. Always repeat that, right? When nothing makes any sense, when these official stories come up and it's like two is same as three, how many lights do you see, right? They're in a level of absolute doublespeak, cognitive dissonance. They are the people that say the emperor has his clothes on, living in a total bubble of constant denial. That's how the world turns into complete shit, because the evil people of the planet, they have a strategy, they're successful, they've got resources. Whether we like it or not, most of them are really brilliant. I mean, it's utterly brilliant. I see climate change shit all the time. Every fucking day, someone's like, somebody donated a bunch of money they made. They took all their tax savings they got from Donald Trump's tax bracket saying, which supposedly doesn't exist if you talk to a liberal, right? And they donated it to climate change research. And there's an article on it about how fucking great they were. Okay. So you threw away your money into a globalist propaganda. Either you're dumb as a fucking bag of hammers and you haven't done any research on global warming, or you're trying to virtue signal to the world and tell the deep state, I'm on your side. Now, does the president of the United States currently say that NASA landed a man on the moon, America landed a guy on the moon, is a big patriotic speech? He does. But he also, when he was talking to the ISS folks, he asked one of the, he was doing some live broadcast, right? It was this televised thing where Trump's sitting in his office talking to some probably fucking composite green screen, whatever. And he asked him, he goes, well, when can we get to Mars with a human being and get back safely? Oh, sir, that's not going to happen until probably the late 2030s at best. And the estimate right now that I recently read was 2039. How the fuck do they know, right? And he goes, why? Why is it going to take so long? Well, sir, we got to invent a bunch of technology and da-da-da-da. He's sitting there going, well, we went to the moon. What's so hard about getting to Mars? Well, again, sir, he says, what if I gave you an infinite budget? This is the gist of the conversation. What if I gave you an infinite budget? And we could get this shit moving faster. Can we bring it in? Oh, I don't think so. It's not supposed to happen in anyone's lifetime. Again, let's say there's a drug that's going through the FDA, and they know it's going to cause cancer in 20 years. Well, what's the FDA? It's an appointed agency by the President of the United States. But he gets a recommendation of who he's supposed to appoint, because he doesn't know everybody. He doesn't know who's brilliant and who's a shill and all that kind of stuff. So for the past probably 40 years since the aspartame went through in the Reagan era, Reagan was told to sign a bunch of guys into the FDA, and he ended up getting rid of all of the good people and brought in all the shills who were paid lobbyists prior to being these people running the FDA. And they allowed aspartame to go through, a complete cancer-causing, horrible fucking diseased thing, right? I was told recently that Diet Pepsi removed aspartame from their drink. I don't know what they supposedly replaced it with, and I don't know if that's true, but someone recently told me that. I don't drink any of that shit, just so you know. But here's how it works. How long do you think you're going to serve on an FDA board? Less than 20 years. Less than 20 years. So let's say that drug turns up eventually causing cancer in 20 years. Again, and that's only if someone can actually trace it back to the drug that's causing this problem. That's a tall order, man. And I don't think it can be done. I do not think it could be done. But let's just say you could. There's some smoking gun. Remember the Acme cream in the 80s that sterilized all those kids? I know a guy that can't have any kids because his parents gave him that stuff. They didn't know, but they were told by the Federal Drug Administration that stuff was safe. And now they are never, a kid loses his ability to have children for the rest of his life. That guy should be getting kickbacks from that pharmaceutical company for the rest of his fucking life. That's a big loss in his life. So the reason why this stuff gets pushed forward in the NASA organization is for the same exact reason the FDA gets to push its cancer-causing drugs forward. They're not going to be there. They're going to be retired. They're going to be rich as shit. When you see people in Monaco on those big yachts and stuff, those are your FDA people. And you see those beautiful houses on the beach, on the lakes, and those guys have big fucking pontoons and all the jet skis. Those are the FDA people. They took a paycheck to push through drugs that cause horrible side effects. And again, that's only if we catch them. And this is the way they have run the world up until the Truth Movement, up until the Great Awakening, up until the Q Movement. Again, regardless of Q's true or false, he is real. He is changing the planet. He's getting people to think. He's getting people to see the deception. So he's either the best truther on planet Earth running a LARP using real facts, or he's real, and it's something else we should pay attention to. Again, the guy wouldn't be attacked in the press constantly if he was totally fake. No one's attacking me in the press for saying we didn't go to the moon, because they know that most people still believe we did go to the moon. But they're doing everything they possibly can to reinforce this evidence that we went. Anyway, I think you feel me. If you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. It's where you can change feeds. So if you like video, but you want to have it in your car or when you jog or when you work out or whatever, get over to the podcast and download those into your favorite player. There's a podcast link straight on the website, so your mobile device definitely has a podcast player. Go ahead and load it up. If you want to get into a really fun community, definitely recommend you get into our locked Facebook group. I mean, it is a blast. I mean, it's my favorite place to go constantly. If you want to donate to the show, there's Patreon. For a buck, you can hear all of the sort of making of stuff. You can ask me personal questions, and I put a specific focus on the Patreon questions before I go anywhere else in the world, because these people are paying for the privilege of information. Twitter, for those of you who don't like all the other social media, but you love Twitter, just subscribe to deepthoughtsradio.com. You can just look it up, Deep Thoughts Radio, excuse me, and there's a link straight on the website to it, and link over there. Not a tremendous amount of conversation because there aren't a tremendous amount of followers, but people are starting to like the videos as soon as they go up, so I'm starting to see some traffic there. Anyway, take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.